Penguin Random House Audio presents I Want You to Know We're Still Here, a post-Holocaust memoir by Esther Saffron Foer. Read for you by Ellen Archer, with chapter one and the epilogue read by the author. For my parents and those who came before them, for my grandchildren and those who will come after them.
Chapter 1. My birth certificate says that I was born on September 8, 1946, in Sigenheim, Germany. It's the wrong date, wrong city, wrong country. It would take me years to understand why my father created this fabrication. Why each year my mother came into my room on March 17th and gave me a kiss and whispered, "Happy birthday." Piecing together the fragments of my family story has been a lifelong pursuit. I'm the offspring of Holocaust survivors, which by definition means there's a tragic and complicated history. My childhood was filled with silences that were punctuated by occasional shocking disclosures. I understood there was a lot that I didn't know, besides the secret of my invented birthday. My parents were reluctant to speak of the past, and I learned to maneuver around difficult subjects. When I was in my early 40s, preparing to give a talk at a local synagogue, I decided this might be a good opportunity to fill in a few gaps of our family story. I sat down with my mother in the pink kitchen of her 1950s suburban tract house on a street where most of the other homes were occupied by families of Holocaust survivors. Sitting at her faux marble laminated kitchen table, I could see the carefully cut coupons sorted into neat piles by the refrigerator, ready for the next shopping trip. In the cabinet below, there was enough flour and cereal, all of it purchased on sale, to withstand a major catastrophe. I started with a few questions about my father and his experience during the war. He had been an enigma, a mercurial figure that all conversation danced around, even in my own head. My mother took a sip of the instant coffee that she loved and casually mentioned that my father had been in a ghetto with his wife and daughter. He'd been on a work detail when they were both murdered by the Nazis. Absolutely stunned, I blurted out, "He had a wife and daughter? Why haven't you told me this before? How can you be telling me this now for the first time?" I'd grown up surrounded by ghosts, haunted by relatives who were rarely talked about, and by stories that no one would share. Now there was a new ghost that I hadn't even known about. My own sister. I pressed my mother for more, but she made it clear that the conversation was over. "Genug schon, enough already." I'm not sure how much she even knew about his family. I suspected that she and my father didn't speak much of the past, even to each other. Life was all about moving forward. I walked out of my mother's house in a daze. I didn't know it then, but this was the beginning of a search that would define the next phase of my life. Determined to learn more, I scoured online Holocaust databases to see if I could find a birth or death record for my sister. To no avail. I hired researchers in Ukraine. I even hired an FBI agent to analyze photographs. My searches came up empty. I talked to everyone I could think of to see what they knew, and I got the same response. There were so many people killed, so many babies. How can we remember all of the names? I didn't want all the names. I wanted the name of my sister. Of the person closest to me killed in the Holocaust, my half-sibling, I had not one detail, not a name, not a picture, not one piece of a memory. Here was a child, one among at least 6 million Jews, one of almost 1.5 million children who were murdered during the Holocaust, and there was no way to remember that this child had even lived. How do you remember someone who has left no trace? The search took me to places that allowed me to more deeply understand the Holocaust and how it continued to reverberate long past the liberation and into future generations. It was ultimately a search that took me to places inside myself that scared me. It has been said that Jews are an ahistorical people, concerned more with memory than history. A curious fact, there is no word in the Hebrew language that precisely connotes history. Zikaron and Zakor, used in its stead, translate to memory. The word for history in modern Hebrew is lifted from the English word, which was originally lifted from the Greek historia. History is public. Memory is personal. It's about stories and select experiences. History is the end of something. Memory is the beginning of something. Jews have six senses: touch, taste, sight, smell, hearing, memory. This is the way my son Jonathan summed it up in his 2002 novel, Everything is Illuminated. The Jew is pricked by a pin and remembers other pins. When a Jew encounters a pin, he asks, "What does it remember like?" Parsing this intersection of history and memory may seem an abstraction, a mere matter of linguistics, but for me, it is quite real. I've spent much of my life trying to excavate the memories that elude me. On the mantle in my living room is a curated still life of glass jars. A casual visitor to my home might think I've created a shrine to dirt and debris, and they wouldn't be entirely wrong. Inside each carefully labeled jar is a sliver of memory, a piece of earth from my mother's shtetl in Kolky, Ukraine, sandstone from the massive Uluru Rock in central Australia, remnants of the Berlin Wall, rubble from the Warsaw Ghetto. Once on a trip to Sardis, Turkey, I noticed that a piece of the marble mosaic floor of an ancient synagogue had come loose, and I discreetly slipped a fragment of tile into my bag when my husband had turned the other way. Despite his frequent admonitions to please not abscond, let alone cross international borders with my purloined ruins, my husband Bert knows that getting me to abide is hopeless. I'm an aggressive collector, a woman with a mission who walks around stuffing pieces of personal history into Ziploc bags. Memory is everywhere in my house. The 21 jars in my living room are part of a larger collection that spills into my kitchen, where along the window ledge are nearly 40 more. This obsession runs in my family. Who knows, it might even be genetic. As improbable as it sounds, the youngest of my three sons, Joshua, was the 2006 USA Memory Championship winner. It's a subject about which he wrote a book, Moonwalking with Einstein: The Art and Science of Remembering Everything. Frank, my oldest, a writer and historian, recently spoke on a panel in Kyiv, Ukraine, our ancestral homeland, titled, "Can Memory Save Us from History? Can History Save Us from Memory?" Jonathan, my middle child, managed to elicit the words, "Holy shit," from fire inspectors who paid a routine visit to his dorm room at Princeton in the late 1990s, where they saw, along with the usual collegiate fire hazards of tangled electrical cords and do-it-yourself lighting, a collection of Ziploc bags carefully tacked to his wall in rows, his own receptacles of memory.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?